CZ Studio and Radio Verte presents The Wild Wind by Corey Zimmerman.
Chapter 14. Soon Fanny began to show them unmistakable signs of tuberculosis as the waves spread across the hilltop. And Dr. Zola was incredibly paranoid, suspecting Fanny was up to her usual antics. And he instructed the nurses to watch to ensure she was not eating soap. However, Fanny's symptoms seemed genuine enough. She couldn't eat, and when she did, she vomited. She lost weight and coughed through the night. She was feverish. And the microscope showed the presence of a large number of tubercle bacilli. It would have been impossible for Fanny to manipulate such lab results, so the doctor decided to send her to the ward for tuberculosis patients. Fanny was gracious, as the colony provided her an excellent opportunity to demonstrate her culinary talent. And the colony ate well from the day of her transfer, often dining outside upon white linen under the elms. "More tea?" Fanny asked a woman who trembled so severely the cup had to be refilled every few moments. "Shush, Cecil, I'm not faking it for roast beef." "Fanny, these roast beef sandwiches are delicious. What is your secret?" a nurse asked. "Au jus," Fanny replied. "Ah, what?" the nurse asked. "Jus," Fanny replied. It was no surprise such a radical change in her diet and environment brought about a rapid change in her physical condition. She gained weight and most of her symptoms were gone by early fall. As Fanny's health continued to improve, vigilance relaxed. And instead of being a closely guarded patient, Fanny became not only a valuable aid in the kitchen, but in the care of the sick as well. Fanny had become indispensable.
"Hello? Hello? Can you please send someone? One of the patients has gone missing," Nurse Helen pleaded into the telephone. "I just did the head count and I saw her cot is empty. I swear the last time I checked she was there. I don't know what happened. She was here 1 second and then she was gone."
"Her name?
Fanny."
"Her name is Fanny." Unlike most of the staff, Grandma Nurse chose not to live on campus. Although nurses were generally expected not to marry, Grandma Nurse had been married for decades to a lazy man, a man who sat at home doing this or that, mostly nothing at all. Grandma Nurse fed and cared for him for reasons one cannot easily comprehend. Many were utterly surprised she had never plunged a steak knife into his heart as he chewed on a pork chop. He was a selfish man. He forgot her birthday so often that Grandma Nurse made her way that May down to Behringer's department store all by herself to buy herself a present celebrating her 7th decade, a lovely handbag. And each morning, Grandma Nurse made the journey from Grandview by train. She found solace in the routine, in the orange hues reflecting off the river's surface, and in the geese spooked by the train's whistle as they batted their mighty wings from the placid orange hue into the brilliant morning sky. It warmed her heart, and she forgot all about the pork chops, if even for a time. Each morning, she also made the arduous climb up the creaking planks of the hilltop to afford those pork chops. Halfway to the top, she would plop down and rest a spell on a bench to catch her breath, which provided the most splendid views of the dear old river below. She loved the vista as much as the oversized handbag, which now sat upon her lap. The finest possession she had ever owned.
As she put her mirror back in her bag after checking her silver hair, a young lady appeared seemingly out of nowhere and sat down beside her. Still a bit out of breath. "It's a beautiful morning," said the lady. "What a splendid view." "Yes, it's quite lovely," said Grandma Nurse. "You look very familiar, dear. Are you here to visit a patient?" she asked. "I am actually here in search of a job. I am a traveling nurse." "And what is your name?" asked Grandma Nurse. "Amy. My name is Amy." Filling out a temporary employment form, Nurse Bird asked, "And how old are you, Amy?"
24.
"And where are you from?"
"Southern Illinois."
"May I see your certifications, please?"
"Yes, they are right here," said Amy, digging through her handbag.
Marion State Hospital. Well, I must inform you, we do things a bit differently here." "When did you want to begin?"
"Well, as soon as possible."
"I see. At some point, we will sit down and discuss our policies. But first, I assign you night watch shift in Ward C, and we'll see where to go from there." That evening, Amy arrived for her shift on time, and all went well. And after her shift, she returned to her room, a routine she followed day after day, rarely venturing out and never leaving the hilltop. Amy formed no friendships, seldom interacted with other nurses, and only remained in the dining hall long enough to eat a large meal, after which she returned to her room. Amy's reclusive lifestyle bothered no one, most assuming she was but a shy girl, and many failed to even notice her at all. Bookbinder, of course, noticed Amy at once. Their eyes first met in the dining hall. Amy spotted him staring at her from a table away. She gave him a tiny smile in return, and from that day forth, Book could not take his eyes off of Amy. 2 weeks had passed without word of Fanny, and Dr. Zola began to desperately hope perhaps Fanny was passing as an ordinary member of society undisturbed. But Fanny's antics had become a bad influence on several other patients by now. While most who had begun running off were perfectly harmless, a good many people did not feel safe with the patients wandering about their farms. After a patient or two badly frightened a woman while their husbands were off in the fields. "Hello, what are you doing here?" Mr. Manns asked the strange man he found in his barn. Attired in a coat and undershirt only, no pants, but wearing a pair of shoes, the man said, "I have a dozen chickens here, dressed and ready for market. And I'm waiting for it to quit raining so I can take him to town." Then he asked, "Where's that white horse that belongs here?"
"Why, it's in the pasture," said Mr. Manns.
"Well, I want him," demanded the strange man. "It's an awfully chilly morning. You better come to the house and get a cup of coffee before starting to town," said Mr. Manns. Once in the house, Mr. Manns was able to call the asylum and notify them a patient had arrived at his farm. Nurse Kate soon arrived, a few other attendants, and the curious farmer offered them a cup of coffee as well. And Kate explained to Mr. Manns, "His name is Sal. You used to be a farmer yourself, weren't you, Sal? Before moving to the hilltop, isn't that right?" Nurse Kate instructed the attendants to stay inside and enjoy their coffee, then walked outside with Mr. Manns to investigate what Sal had done in the barn. For the farmer was so surprised by his presence and so eager to calm him, he wasn't entirely sure. They found one of his horses fully harnessed and a dozen of his best chickens with their heads wrung off and scattered about the barn floor. But the chickens were piled together. It was not known how long it took Sal to kill the chickens, but they had been taken from another building some distance away, and it was supposed Sal carried them to the barn alive, one or two at a time, before wringing their heads off, all the while, nude from the waist down. The following day, a patient named Clyde, whose legs had been amputated after having them frozen during an escape attempt from a poorhouse up north, was found missing. The night went by, and all the next day, and on the third day around noon, a telephone message came in, saying that the legless man was in a cornfield at the Walters farm, 4 miles to the north of the hospital. The caller further stated the man was trying to set fire to the corn stalks and that he was afraid to go near him. Nurse Kate went to the Walkers in a buggy immediately. The road was very rough, and the trip was a very hard one.
When she finally arrived at the farm, Clyde was gone, and the farmer did not know what had become of him. By the time Nurse Kate returned to the hilltop, Clyde was back in his cottage. Clyde could evidently get over ground with his stubs, a good deal better than a horse with legs. Soon the press had begun to have a heyday with the patient's escapades, and Dr. Zola dropped the paper to his desk and rubbed his eyes until they were beet red. Then there was a knock on his door. "What is it?" he asked. "Doctor, I have some bad news. Raymond's body was discovered at the bottom of the bluff in the willow beside the tracks." Raymond had only days prior entered a man's house, stripped himself naked, took the man's pipe, commenced smoking, and when asked what he was doing, answered, "Get out the way. I'm the boss of this here place." The medical examiner determined that Raymond died from a major head injury, most likely after being hit by a train. The cerebellum was found to be softened. There was also softening of the gray substance of the convolutions of the cerebrum, especially on the left hemisphere, at its central lobe and superior surface. "Thank you, Kate," said the doctor. "Oh, and Grandma Nurse would like to have a word with you." The following day, Dr. Zola summoned Nurse Amy to his office. "How are you, Amy?" asked the doctor. "Very pleasant, thank you. And how are you adjusting to life at the hilltop with your duties?" "Well, I rather enjoy my duties, doctor." The doctor took a moment before pulling a letter from an envelope. "I wanted to bring a matter to your attention, Amy. I have received a letter from your mother, and she seems to be awfully desperate to hear from you. She says that you left home on the first day of the month to work at our institution, but that you have not written a line since. Do you not believe you are acting a bit neglectful in your duties as a daughter?" "You should write your mother immediately," he said frankly. "But doctor," Amy began to rebuke, but determined to squash the petty ordeal at once, he interrupted her, again insisting she write the letter immediately. He opened his desk drawer, removed a piece of paper and pen, and set them on the desk in front of Amy. He grabbed a chair from the corner of his office, saying, "Go on, have a seat." She sat, picked up the pen, and scratched off a quick note. "Am doing well. Amy. A-M-I-E." The doctor folded it and placed the letter into a stamped envelope, which he addressed. "Now please, if you will place it in the mailbox." Amy took the envelope and followed the doctor to the box on the wall just outside his office. She looked up at the doctor as Nurse Kate watched out of the corner of her eye. The doctor nodded his head, and Amy dropped the envelope into the box. "Thank you, that will be all," he said. The doctor then returned to his office, considering the incident resolved, and the doctor resumed institutional life's daily routine, disturbed only by the thought of the sensation Fanny might create while at large. 7 days later, the doctor once again summoned Amy to his office. As she entered, he did not hesitate to read off a telegram from her mother, which read, "Letter from my daughter was not written or signed by her. I'm afraid she is ill and that the news is being withheld from me. I'm coming at once. My daughter writes her name Amy, A-M-Y. And the fact that the message was signed Amy, A-M-I-E, confirms my suspicion. Your mother has informed me that she will come on the first available train from Southern Illinois. I am sure you are aware it must be an arduous trip for her. I am sure she will arrive fatigued and overcome with nerves," said the doctor. "I feel awful she must travel all this way, but I understand her worries, and I hope upon seeing you, her fears may subside." When Amy's mother arrived, the doctor asked Nurse Kate to bring Amy to his office. The old woman's face was as pale as her ghostly white hair, and she wore a pair of tiny round glasses, and a long life in the dirt-poor South was evident by the drabbiness of her attire. When there was a slight knock on the office door, the doctor stepped outside, saying he wished not to intrude upon their reunion, and as he left, Amy walked in. She stood silently in the corner, and Miss Murphy, crinkling her brow, held her old worn-out purse before her breast. "Where is my daughter?" she asked, but Amy remained silent, keeping her eyes to the floor. "Look at me," demanded Miss Murphy. Amy looked up, and upon seeing the strange girl's eyes, Miss Murphy knew something was not right. The mother stood and opened the office door and hollered, "I want to see my daughter right now."
Where is she?
The doctor walked into the office and shut the door behind him. What's going on here? Asked Miss Murphy. The doctor looked at Amy with her head down in the corner and raised his arm toward her, saying, But this is your Amy right here.
That ain't my Amy, she said. I ain't never laid eyes on this girl a day in my life, and I certainly hadn't raised her. I should know, after all.
Growing into a panic, the mother let out a shriek, causing Nurse Kate to rush into the office. Miss Murphy screamed, That's not my daughter. My daughter has green eyes, not the black eyes of the devil. I will hold you all equally responsible and invoke the widow's curse upon your heads.
The doctor then decided to turn to Amy for a solution. Standing at the far end of the room, her eyes again upon the floor, well-dressed in her nurse's uniform, rather stiff and nervous, but otherwise unmovable by this heart-rending experience. As the doctor began to question her why she refused to comfort her hysterical mother, Amy let out a maniacal shriek, followed by a burst of hysterical laughter, before falling faint to the floor. As she laid convulsing, her nurse's cap came off, and a blonde wig came with it. The doctor then bent down and whispered in her ear, Fanny. Fanny opened her eyes and whimpered, Oh, doctor.
Now come out of that fit, said Dr. Zola. I just wanted to keep this up a week longer till payday. I was going to buy a ticket out west and never bother you again, I swear.
How did you know it was me?
Well done, Grandma. That will be all, said the doctor. Grandma Nurse smiled as she removed her own wig of white hair. She let down her long silver locks before taking off her tiny round glasses and using a rag Nurse Kate provided, wiped the excessive white foundation from her face, instantly looking 2 decades younger.
Damn it to hell, said Fanny, as a great battle of mind against mind ensued.
Fanny, tomorrow we will surrender you to the penitentiary, the doctor said. You were only committed here pending your recovery, and you have failed to recover. The law must take its course. Perhaps while reflecting in solitary confinement, you will understand how your lack of proper reasoning has sabotaged your well-being.
Don't send me back to the pen, begged Fanny. I will die in solitary. I can't live on bread and water alone. If you send me back, you condemn me to starving to death.
Unbeknownst to Fanny, she had just put herself in checkmate.
Fanny, I hear you are fond of the roast beef that we serve here at the Hilltop, are you not? Asked the doctor.
Why, yes, it is quite good, said Fanny with a nod.
Oh, you got me, Doc. You got me, said Fanny in surrender.